Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 393.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and we wonder if it's better to be a Democrat or a Republican right now, you know, like in a larger, grander state of the party sense. Maybe we'll even get to that. Today, I am your host, Nagin Farsad. In fact, most days, I am Nagin Farsad. And we're going to talk about how expensive tween taste has become on today's show. We'll also talk about a trend called bookshelf wealth. We'll talk about Oscar snubs, and we'll talk about an interesting lawsuit against Madonna. And of course, we'll dip our toes into the primary waters where our toes may get frostbite, become gangrenous, and fall off. Today, I'm so excited by this panel. This is one of those panels where I just get to show off the cadre of comedians that I get to work with in my life. They're so incredible. Joining us, you know, they've both been on this show before, so you're probably already fans. First up, co-creator of The Daily Show. She's also founder of the Abortion Access Front, with whom I have had the extreme pleasure of doing shows and actions around the country. It's such an incredible organization, the Abortion Access Front. It is the one and only Liz Winstead.
Hi, friends.
Hey, Liz.
Yeah.
Also joining us today is this gentleman. I have had the pleasure of seeing him just obliterate audiences into puddles of laughter. He has a new dry bar special that's available now. It's called Nothing More American. You can find that on YouTube. He's also part of the Be Funny Tour with Nate Bargatze. This man is just is everywhere all the time, all at once, and in every alternate reality, he is incredibly funny. It is Dustin Chafin. Hey, Dustin.
Hey, what an intro.
So hilarious.
Thank you. You're so good. You're so good. You're so good. I want you to MC every show.
Well, before we get into the the show, I just want to remind listeners that they can support the show at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. I also want to remind listeners to, you know, one of the things I haven't mentioned very often because I've been so Apple focused is that you can also review the show on Spotify. So folks, let's start filling those Spotify reviews as well. So review the show on Apple. And when you're tired of doing that, review the show on Spotify. And I don't know, I'm curious. I'm not one of those people that generally like turns to Spotify for podcasts, but I know that I'm increasingly in the minority. So please join us on wherever you get your podcasts. And review us on wherever they let you do that. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. So yesterday they announced the Oscar nominations, and there was one really notable snub in the form of Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig. Greta Gerwig was not nominated for Best Director for Barbie, and Margot Robbie was not nominated for Best Actress for Barbie. Interestingly, Ryan Gosling was nominated for Best Actor. America Ferrera was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Greta Gerwig was nominated for Screenplay, and Margot Robbie, you know, was sort of indirectly nominated under the Best Picture category because Barbie was nominated for Best Picture. It's funny because I don't know about you guys. I'm on a bunch of like text message threads about whether or not we should be really upset about this. And I'm of every mind about this. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Liz, as a woman. We will start with you. Do you feel irritated or fine about this?
I mean, I feel like, oh, you know, it's another week where somebody who is a woman gets snubbed. But I do think like we really need to recognize the bravery of Ryan Gosling to really show up and be a man who was portrayed without a penis and how society might feel about that. And to have him really tackle his whole journey of being oppressed and then finding
the stuff with
finding
horses.
The patriarchy and really trying to change the world that is so dominated by feminist matriarchs. He failed, but I do think that, you know, it's like, you know, it was his, you know, George C. Scott, it was his Patton. And I feel like, you know, let's not be too hard on him.
Justin, what do you think?
Well, I would have nominated his abs alone. You know what I mean? Like, just no shirt in that
Absolutely.
Movie, in a fur jacket and a cowboy hat, my kind of guy. I don't know. You know, it's just like, it's just another stupid Oscar thing. I miss the days of like Brando when he didn't show up and he had like a Native American accept the award. I don't think Robbie should show up. I think, you know, just cause some, you know, chaos. That's what I think. But I think she'll be fine, obviously. But, you know.
Yes. Also, she has been nominated in the past.
And the direction was amazing. That's the craziest one. That movie was very well directed. I mean, very difficult trying to make this toy, you know, relevant and all the stuff that she did to make that movie happen. So to me, that's the biggest snub is, you know.
Yeah, that's the snub that made me insane. Also, like, whatever, as a person who's made movies, like, she did that. Like, if you enjoyed Barbie, it is in very, 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 very large part of Greta Gerwig, right? And so the idea that she wouldn't be recognized for that, but it also reminds me of the time when Ava DuVernay was not nominated for Selma as a director. You know, that Selma was nominated. And it's, again, it's just like bizarre. And it feels like if you enjoyed this movie, if you think anything about this movie is worth talking about remotely, it's because of the director. And I don't understand why Greta Gerwig wasn't nominated.
And it was like when Barbara Streisand got snubbed for, you know, In the Garden of Good and Evil. And you're just like, how do you give a Best Picture nomination? It seems like an inevitable hand in hand. A picture is not going to be Best Picture unless the director has supremely directed it. Because It's just bizarre. Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I know they have penises, but even Scorsese and Tarantino, they never got. I mean, Scorsese got it for like a remake or something, but then and Tarantino never got it for like all his film, Pulp Fiction and stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's just, I don't know who's making these decisions. They're just idiots.
I know. I guess it's just, you wonder who fills out the forms.
Yeah.
Right, right. And also, by the way, like the title song for The Muslims Are Coming was actually submitted to the Academy, right? So it was like under consideration. Obviously, we did not get nominated that year, but the process was really interesting because at that time, and it, you know, this was like 2014 or whatever, like you actually had to make DVDs, you know? So then I was asked like, oh, can you submit 250 DVDs of this movie so that we can hear this song or whatever? And I'm like, are these people gonna watch my? Are these 250 people gonna watch my movie? And like, you know, it seemed like the process was a little crazy, and I can imagine that they're not watching everything. You know what I mean? And also that, and the Oscars are trying to like broaden and, you know, make it more diverse and make it more reflective of America. And I also just think it takes time. And then, and sadly, people like Greta Gerwig are like, you know, part of the transition phase that get, you know, that fall through the cracks.
Yeah, I will do a sellout spin on this. I do feel America's that dialogue with that speech as she says women,
yeah.
That is the most important part of the movie, in my opinion. So at least if she wins, they play that. We have conversation about that. So that would be the silver lining of this whole thing.
Agreed.
That's a great speech.
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was really, yeah, it's incredible. All right, let's move on to another piece of culture that's happening this week. We read a piece in the Washington Post called Tween Tastes Are Expensive, Blame Social Media by Jocelyn Pizer. And in it, she starts with an anecdote about a 12-year-old who had a Christmas gift haul valued at $2,200 and included brands like Kendra Scott, Apple, Fenty, Summer Fridays, and more. And I guess my question for you guys first is like, I am just surprised by this, like by being a 12-year-old with any kind of like awareness of those tastes. When did you guys develop an awareness of brands and expensive things and all of that stuff? Like, how young were you?
I was young. I remember it was all Polo and Izod and Gloria Vanderbilt jeans and Calvin Klein jeans.
Yeah.
So I was young, and I remember, you know, you had to have the right sneakers. I remember my parents, they had kind of a low month and they couldn't afford, and we went to Payless or something. And, you know, the kids bullied me, you know, just because I had these shoes that weren't Nike or Adidas. So, yeah, I think there is this weird thing that happens with kids where they feel like to be popular or to be accepted, they have to have the expensive stuff. And then now with the internet is crazy. I can't even imagine that. At least when we were kids, it was like, you know, you only try to impress, you know,
peers,
40 people in your class. Now it's like the whole world they're trying to impress, you know, thousands and millions of people. So I think it's definitely gone to, you know, just the extreme. But yeah, I still like expensive clothes, I'm not going to lie.
Liz, were you a tween of expensive taste?
I was not. Because here's where I totally lucked out. Well, first of all, I'm the youngest of five kids in a Catholic family, so the hand-me-downs were real. But I came of age, you know, in the peer pressure time, I came of age when I had cool older siblings. And they were listening to like old Rolling Stones. And so I was very much in my peer group. Vintage clothes and thrift stores were what was very cool. It was at the same time of that sort of rise of Calvin Klein's and Guess jeans and all that. But there was the whole, but that was associated for us with like disco, and we were the punk rock kids and the disco people were douchebags. And so all of that fancy shit became, we thought was douchey.
Like,
right.
Cool.
And we were watching old films and listening to 60s music and the British invasion. So I was looking for vintage paisley shirts and like, you know, peg leg old, you know, so I lucked out on that peer pressure part. But as I've gotten older now, I just want to find more expensive vintage shit, which is like ridiculous. Right. So I've also always been somebody who like growing up in Minnesota, like we had like a lot of environmental stuff on our books and in our world for a long time. Like we were the first city in America to recycle and stuff. So I've also been keenly aware of buying more shit. So I like to always keep my shit to a minimum or have it be from someone else for the most part, you know, set aside my underwear.
And I actually thought, yeah, like that's an excellent point because I thought that with that Gen Z would be more on that tip, right? That like the cool thing to do would not be to buy Fenty and all whatever. The cool thing to do would be to brag about how you barely spent anything and got everything, you know, from a thrift shop because they're more environmentally aware. So there's part of this that I just think is like antithetical to what some of the ideological stuff that they're driven by, which is climate change, you know? So that part of this feels very weird to me. But the other thing that they have to reckon with, which I guess is just a stronger force than their desire to be good environmental stewards, is product pushing by influencers, which Dustin mentioned. Like I had what Dustin was talking about, just like those 40 people, and some of them would wear like a, you know, Guess jeans or whatever, but like that was really kind of the pressure. That was the only real pressure. I didn't see much pressure in that sense. I didn't get the, you know, influencers pushing products and a product going viral and all that stuff. The thing that I was most stunned by in this piece was not even necessarily like the retail stuff that they buy out of peer pressure and out of influencer pressure, but the skin products.
Yeah.
There's like stories in this article about a 10-year-old fighting with like a 25-year-old at Sephora over the last whatever particular skincare product. And
I mean, if we could go back in time and use more skincare.
Exactly. You know? I should have been using hyaluronic acid when I was 10 years old, and I definitely was not. But I mean, that's a thing. I don't know. It makes me a little sad. I don't know. What do you think about these young girls and their skincare products that they're spending, by the way, hundreds of dollars on?
I mean, I feel.
I mean, kids are.
You know, since I don't know that much about skincare, I honestly had somebody say to me once, if you wash it off your face, do not invest a lot of money in it. If you keep it on your face, invest money in it because it's a thing that actually stays on your face. And I was like, okay, I'll go with that rule. But, you know, I guess the question is, how much of this regime stuff is garbage products that we're selling versus how much of it is, this is a healthy way to actually take care of your skin. And I don't know the answer to that. You know, it's kind of like what you said earlier, Dustin. It's like, I don't know, maybe we should all been doing that when we were kids so we would know some things. Like, who knows, you know, like, I don't know. So I feel like mostly it's just like torturing young girls to have them believe that they're not, that they're never pretty enough. But like when you're 10, are you trying to look 8? Like what are you doing?
It's just weird.
I don't know.
Guys, I don't know. All right. Well, let's move on. Let me know. Is your tween have incredibly expensive taste, and what are you doing about it? Also, I hear these stories, and I have a 5-year-old. I'm just like, oh God, is this what is coming for me? No, please, no. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into another topic.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Today's show is sponsored by Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I have used Rocket Money. And you guys, honestly, I had no idea how many things I was subscribing to that I didn't want to be subscribing to. I think we all enter into subscriptions with a Pollyanna view that we're going to use as a subscription, even though it's a super obscure, you know, educational app from Albania that teaches Russian math or whatever. And then you're like, I'm never going to use this. Why did I get it? I should remember to cancel it. And then you don't. And I know you guys are like me, and I know you've done this to yourselves. And guess what? 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about. So we're all in this bucket. And I think paying for that stuff is so angering, and Rocket Money is there to help. Because basically Rocket Money shows you, hey, look at this is what all the things you are subscribed to. But then here's the bigger thing. To unsubscribe, you don't have to go through the whole rigmarole. Rocket Money unsubscribes for you with a click of a button. It's so easy. The other thing Rocket Money did for me, which I was incredibly grateful for, was reduce the cost of one of my bills. It was my cable bill. Yes, I still have cable. Rocket Money has over 5 million users that have saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. I mean, that tracks for me and for the number of things I was paying for that I'm frankly ashamed of. So thank you, Rocket Money, for like fixing the shame glaze on my life. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. rocketmoney.com/fakethenation, you guys.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. Let's talk about politics, you guys. Trump won the New Hampshire primary. Nikki Haley was 11 points behind. She is vowing to stay in the race. I don't know, Liz, what do you think is happening? Like, do you really think she's staying in the race? Are you surprised she didn't do better? Or are you not at all surprised? Where are you at?
I'm not surprised that a brown woman didn't win a GOP nomination. No, I am not. Even all of her slavery denying and there's no racism in America does not sell a base of people who are literally saying go home to anybody whose skin is like the color, you know, darker than a marshmallow. So please. What do I think? I don't know how much money she has. Is she just hanging out being like, I'm just going to wait for the, you know, indictment to come down so they'll anoint me. But also it goes to the convention and they pick if Trump goes to jail and can't be running, it's the convention that chooses the candidate. So I don't know what she's doing. I don't know what she actually thinks. And I also just wonder, part of, I think, being a member of that party means that you have to absolutely check your own, like, dignity, you know, you basically become a dog that just licks its own asshole in the middle of a party. It's like, I don't care what happens to me. Yes. I'm going to roll up into the state I'm from, where every single politician who holds office there hates me, as endorsed the other guy, and be like, just like all in it and feel good about my, like, what? Work? Can you imagine? I mean, I don't understand it from a point of like, how do I wake up every day and face people?
Dustin, what did you think?
Well, the Republican Party, they care a lot about skin. Yeah. So that is kind of the transition to that. Just kind of flip it a little bit. I heard rumors, you know, and then he went after her, you know, saying that she's, you know, not presidential or whatnot.
Her dress wasn't expensive.
Something weird. Yeah, her dress.
Yeah,
so
if
weird.
You say any little thing, you know, you're looking out for yourself, he just attacks you and just comes at you. I don't know. I don't know. I'm in that phase where you're just numb and you're like, all right, you're just watching the train wreck of just people getting nominated. I mean, DeSantis going out was the greatest thing ever. Like, that guy was just such an idiot. And so to watch that fall apart was a beautiful thing. So that's what I'm focusing on. DeSantis, I don't really know anybody else. I'm not even watching, but watching him just crumble, thinking that he could bring all that Florida stuff to the national stage and people would have just accept him and he would just be this hero, because he really had that kind of confidence. And so I think she says some things once in a while that aren't too crazy, you know? And so I guess I would prefer someone like her, but you know, it's just, the base is just, it's gone off the deep end. So there's no way they're going to have somebody.
What's also weird is, like, you know, in terms of like, you know, the dog licking its own butt, like, it is like Tim Scott. I mean, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy obviously has been licking his own butt this whole time. So like, that's fine. But Tim Scott, yeah, you know, it's not, I don't know. Did I expect more from him? I oddly did. And he was standing right there with Trump during his victory speech. I feel like the lapdog behavior that everybody, you know, exhibits to this man is so strange to me. I feel like if they had all decided in 2016 or in 2018 or in 2020 or in 2022 to not do that, all it takes is like a critical mass of like 10 of them to be like, no, I just think he's not great, guys. And I really am I'm just like tired of licking his balls. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. Like, he's just not a great guy. Like, if a critical mass had done that, then the party would be fine. And it's so strange to me that they couldn't get a critical mass of 10 people
but
to
I
do
think
that. It's so strange.
I don't think 10 people can. That's assuming that this person is the reason that this ideology has infected our nation. He is a symptom. He did not create it. He allowed all of these people who had to tamp down all of their racist garbage, he allowed that to be normalized. And that's a genie let out of a bottle that people can't, because what the people who were let out of the bottle said was, how come you didn't allow us to be this way? We like this guy because he allowed us to be this way. But I think back to your Tim Scott point, I just love to put a button on it. And that is, in all seriousness, like, it's disgusting enough that Tim Scott, a black man, is licking the boots of Donald Trump, but he also showed his desperation and cruelty by not even saying, I like Nikki Haley. I just really like your policies. He could have said that. And instead he walks on stage after Donald Trump says, you hate Nikki Haley. And he didn't even forcefully come out and say, I don't hate her. And it was really gross. You know, it's just like this lack of humanity and lack of spine is just really disgusting. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, just like, it's just like they all agree to just fundamentally not be courteous. You know what I mean? When Trump is involved. And it's weird.
They're so addicted to that fan base. You know, they don't want to shake anything in that fan base because it's right. Huge. And I think we all underestimate that fan base of people that are the cult allegiance is just insane. And they feel one little step this way, you lose that.
Well,
base.
Also, I think I can say I'm in great company and people would have values. And I've never, ever wanted something so badly that I would be tempted to literally sell out my very convictions and my own personal experiences just so that I could get a brass ring that would not even lead me to happiness because I got there through such ill-gotten gains. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it either. But also talking about this fan base that they're so addicted to, the margin of victory actually in New Hampshire decreased significantly from the primary in 2016. He won New Hampshire by 20 points then over a crowded field. And he fell far short. And this is these are just stats from the New York Times. He fell short of his 30-point triumph in the Iowa caucus. So he is winning, right? But the wins are not like super strong. They're not necessarily sending a great message in terms of general election health for the Trump campaign. And here's another fun one. Only about half of those who voted in the New Hampshire primary said they would even consider him fit for the presidency if he was convicted of a crime. So he sort of theoretically, again, polls, who knows, whatever. But like, if this poll is to be believed, he loses a lot of votes if he gets convicted of a crime. You know, and there's 91 felony accounts against him, charges against him. So there's a real strong possibility that he is convicted of a crime. So I don't know. There's just think of that. I'm not trying to silver lining this, but I am trying to silver lining this. And here's another silver lining. Biden wasn't even on the ballot in New Hampshire because the Democratic Party changed the primary calendar. Thank God. Also, I would like to say for the 5,000th time, why do we have a primary calendar that totally neglects most of the country? Anyway, aren't the primaries just all on one day? Okay, anyways, I've said this before. I'll say it for the rest of my life until it changes. But he won with a write-in campaign. That made me feel a little good. Did that make you feel anything?
I mean, you would expect that. But, you know, but to your point, Nagin, they did those similar polls in Iowa. And of all of the people who were voting for Nikki Haley, 30% of those people said they would not vote for Trump if she was not the nominee. I don't know if that means they would vote for Biden. And there was it was like a 30% across the board, between 20 and 30% of people who said if Trump is convicted of a felony, would you vote for him? 30% said no. So I do think that who turns out in the primaries, like it's the base. And so when you have the base choosing your candidate and the base is those people, when you thrust that candidate into a general election, you can be hosed profoundly. I mean, let's not forget that Republicans have not won, only one time in six elections have they ever won the popular vote for president, right? Yeah. And by millions, still won the president, you know. So it's like you aren't winning.
Right. This is not long term a winning strategy, even though in the short term it can.
We really need those skincare kits to get out there and register.
Yeah,
that's what we need.
That vote is the kind of like 18 to 25 or whatever. It's not a dependable vote, but it could really profoundly move things. And, you know, we talked about this last week with Anat Shankar Osorio about the Taylor Swift effect and all that stuff. Like these are real things that could happen. So,
I mean, the Allman Brothers put Carter in the White House. I mean, maybe she could, you know, I mean, possible.
Did they really?
Pretty much. I mean, I felt like it helped. When you say Liz, I mean, just that whole, he was the cool president.
Yeah.
You know,
but also,
like, you know, these rock stars.
Yeah, but also there's, you know, the Biden effect of young people have a very different opinion now of our relationship to Israel and Israel's foreign policy. And that is having a lot of young people really saying, this is not how I want my tax dollars spent. I do not want to fund wars. I do not want, you know, and I think that
I want to fund skincare. And that's what we should be.
So, you know, I think
you got to moisturize. Yes.
So we're in such a place. I mean, we're in such a place. That is my insightful take.
All right, folks.
That's your new show. We're in such a place.
So bad.
All right, folks. Let me know. Are we in such a place? And what does such a place mean to you? Let us move on to topic number three. Madonna and concert promoters are being sued for being late. Apparently, she was doing a show at Barclays in New York City, and she didn't get on stage until after 10:45 p.m. on her December 13th show. And when the show was done, concert goers had, quote, limited public transportation, limited ride sharing options. And all of this ended up being documented in a civil complaint. And she's just been sued. So I guess, what do you think of this lawsuit, Dustin?
Well, boo-hoo. It's like, this is what rock stars do. And first of all, it takes 2 hours just to bring her back to life. But it's like that, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's like, because what's next? They're going to, they're going to sue a comic for burning the light. You know what I mean? Like, that's where this is headed. Oh, I had to be somewhere and the comic wouldn't get off stage, or, it could go into some weird place of, I've gone to shows where it started really late or whatever. But once they come out, you forget all that. You forget you've been standing there, and just don't go to concerts. If I went to Guns N' Roses and like they were late or whatever. It just happens. It's a rock star thing, whatever. Some, you don't know what's, maybe she flew in from somewhere, but I don't know. I think it's too much power from people to just be able to sue like that for an artist. It's art. You can't sue over art and because you were inconvenienced about the time.
Right. Like, there is something of a social contract that goes into concert going in particular, which isn't the same. It's not the same if you're going to a Broadway show. It's not the same if you're going to see the Philharmonic. But if you're going to see like a pop star or any kind of rock band, for whatever reason, you enter into a social contract which stipulates that the show will not remotely start on time, literally ever. I have to say, I hate that. Like, I'm the kind of guy that's like, oh, is it supposed to start at 8:30? I'll be there at 8:15. I'll get nice and excited at 8:30. And if you need to hold the doors for a bit, I get that. But yeah. By 8:35, I'd like to see some business on stage for the thing I came to see. The act of showing up. Like, I think the last concert I saw was a few months ago. I saw LCD Sound System. And again, they didn't perform for like, it was probably the show was 8-ish and they didn't perform until 10-ish or 11, But it was dumb. Like, that's dumb. Why do they do,
It builds anticipation. Like, are they coming? What's going on? And then once she went into like a virgin, everybody went bananas. And like,
yeah, I'm sure. I know. Also, the idea that there's limited public transportation in New York City after for a show that's letting out at 1 a.m. is absurd and untrue. But okay. Yeah. But Liz, where are you on this lawsuit?
I mean, I am on. I'm on with Justin. I mean, again, going back to like the amount of money I have paid for punk rock shows that like got one song or didn't even get on stage or like literally, hey, you want to pull the rig out of your arm before the show? Like, honestly, like I think it's a learning moment. It's not a suing moment. You know, like somebody like Madonna, maybe don't go again. Maybe that's your punishment to her. You know, if you pay $150 for a ticket and somebody goes on late, that kind of, it sucks. But for me, it'd be like, oh, if that's how this game goes, you know what? You're not going to get my money again, bitch. And like, that's just the way I would do it. But also, I just don't go to, there's so many giant concerts that I don't go to. I think that maybe what it says is, here's what I'm going to say. Let me spin this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hear it.
If we had a stronger union running these venues, then we would be having stronger unions running these venues, and you have to play by union rules. And it doesn't matter if you're Madonna or it doesn't matter if you're whatever. Union houses have, they keep the ship tight.
Rules.
So let's empower the unions more.
Usually they do. She couldn't have done that at the Beacon.
No. I mean, they're out. Oh my God, the Beacon. Yes. Bam. That's exactly right.
Yeah. They're out. Yeah, there's certain venues. There's no way.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
Do
you
that.
Can't do that at like Carnegie Hall. Yes! You can't do that. I mean,
unions.
There's so many. Yeah,
another reason to support your unions.
I love this spin, Liz. My
so,
God,
sue the arena, yeah. Not Madonna.
Yes, sue the arena for not having like strong unions that keep things on track. No, but that makes a ton of sense because this is again for whatever reason mediums that do embrace unions like the Philharmonic or the opera or whatever, they can't get away with shenanigans. They can't get away with shenanigans for the employees' sake. They're not. It's not really about the audience, but so I would say the annoyance of a thing just not starting on time so you could just enjoy the thing you paid for and then go home and then get a good night's sleep. Like, I have long, even when I was a teenager, I found that annoying. And then add to that, they get to toy with employees' time who don't necessarily have an apparatus. And I don't know specifically what the union status is of the Barclay members, but I can imagine if there is, maybe it should be stronger or there might not be a union. Dustin, you were
going to say. I will say this. I mean, again, another genius move by Madonna. We're talking about her again. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's almost like a PR play.
Yeah.
Know?
Very true.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's all... She was everywhere and now she's coming back. So, you know,
it's also interesting because, I mean, look, we're all comedians and I feel like there's a bit of a shift of this. I want to say, or maybe I don't know if there's a shift because I went to a U2 concert at the Sphere in Las Vegas. Those motherfuckers, they are my favorite childhood band. And they started on time and the whole apparatus that runs the Sphere, it's a whole ridiculous production and everything just moved, you know, was smooth on time. They did one encore and they were out. Like, it was all so clockwork in a way that I deeply appreciated it. We got a good night's sleep and had brunch the next morning. You know what I mean? It was like, that's what I want. But like,
you would think so that's what Madonna people- wants. She's 65. You know, you'd think she'd be like, I'm not going out at 10:45. I want to go to bed. I want to go watch John Hamm and Fargo.
She wants to, yeah.
Like everyone.
She wants to shake it up. She's Madonna. She wants to be a brat and shake it up. That's what she's always done. So,
as comedians, don't you feel like that thing of like, I'm going to be late and drunk and whatever. I'm not saying she was drunk, but like, but this whole thing of I'm going to make everybody wait for me. Like, it feels like. Like we're not really doing that anymore or something that feels just like an old, like a bygone era move. I don't know. What do you think? Do you see current comedians like really doing that?
I mean, a comedian, it's a different thing, I think. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I think Chappelle's kind of shaking it up. And
Ridiculous. Chappelle does
there's,
that.
There's
Chappelle
certain people that are just causing problems. Cat Williams. I mean, there's people causing problems. But far as, you know, getting on stage or whatever, I mean, we don't have a band behind us. We don't have 13 backup dancers. And so, you know, there's not that many people involved in our production. We're just up there slinging jokes. So I don't think there's no reason for us to really, you know, not be on time and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like the only people we're specifically answering to are these hundreds of or thousands of people in the audience, which are like a tremendous number. But yeah, I don't know. It just feels like that kind of rock star behavior just feels a little like oddly, it's something that happened in the, I don't know, 80s or something, and it just shouldn't happen anymore.
And she wants to relive that. So, yeah, I get it. She's like, she wants to be the Madonna that causes problems again, you know?
Right.
Instead of us talking about her injections, we're talking about her being late. So she's probably happy about
that. And not talking about her music. She should be more worried about that.
Yeah, every artist. By the way, I just want to point out this thing that was in the complaint that I just thought was funny. They cited, they quote, suffered actual harm because of the tardiness, and the harm included, quote, annoyance, harassment, time, frustration, and anger. So, I was like, okay, I guess you could just sue for whatever.
We can sue the Republican Party? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I would like to sue the Republican Party for being just like super annoying.
All those feelings,
I'd like to sue them for showing up all the time on time. Could you be a little late and maybe sometimes
kill you
to just not show up? Like, that'd be awesome.
All right. And that, my friends, is the end of the show. And I knew that you guys would just make me feel all kinds of wonderful. I love having conversations with you. And what I would love is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the things that you do. Dustin, where do they do that?
You could hit the old Instagram. We're always trying to get those numbers up. At Dustin_Chafin. And I'll be, can I do a plug? I'll be Wise Guys in Ogden, Utah, headlining February 16th and 17th. And then I'll be on the Nate Bargatze tour after that. We'll be in DC and Bangor, Maine, a whole bunch of really cool dates coming up. So check all that out.
Folks, I mean, really, go check these dates, because watching Dustin perform live is super duper fun. And unlike Madonna, he won't be late. He won't be late.
No, I don't have it like that. I got to be on time.
Liz Winstead, where do people find you?
You can find me on all of the socials at Liz Winstead. And if you want to learn how you can have some fun dragging assholes for filth who are trying to ban abortion, check out Abortion Access Front. We are at Abortion Front on all the socials. And you can sign up to volunteer, learn about our work at aafront.org. And we have a new documentary. We had a documentary crew following us around for 7 years, and the documentary is just starting the festival circuit right now. And the next showing will be at Indie Fest in San Francisco, February 9th. It's called No One Asked You, and you can find that information if you go to Indie Fest in San Francisco.
Oh my gosh. Definitely check out this documentary, because having been around the operations, I mean, you're going to feel things, you're going to laugh, and you're going to just be in awe. So, like, experience that, please. And you know where to find me and all the things that I do. By the way, I'm going to be in Chicago on February 8th doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So if you want to come to a live taping in Chicago and see one of those, I'll be there. And otherwise, I would really like to recognize everybody who makes the show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. And this week's also wonderful producer, Emma Foley, who stepped in to save the day because Andrew is on vacation in Hawaii having the time. Bless his heart. He deserves it. So thank you so much, Emma, for making today's show a possibility. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. If you have any questions or concerns or ideas, you can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to write a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever they let you do that. And that's it. We will be back in your earballs next week.